All righty, our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Comfort Interview Chair. He's really no stranger to a lot of classic rock aficionados, such as myself. I hate to even say that because, you know, I remember when all this music was brand new. Now it's classic rock, kind of aging myself here a little bit. And I'll tell you, he's played with a lot of people, from Alcatraz to Frank Zappa to David Lee Roth and Whitesnake. And get a load of this. Not only is he known for his own style of music and playing guitar, he's got a tremendous amount of talent in several solo CDs that are out, but he's touring right now in a version of King Crimson. It's entitled The Beat. And if you're saying to yourself, well, wasn't that one of their albums? Yeah, it was. It came out in the early 80s. They're going to be performing over at the Mortensons Hall at Bushnell in Hartford on December 3rd. Let's welcome to the show Steve Vai. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here. Thank you.
It's great that you're with us this morning. Everybody knows King Crimson. My goodness. Yeah. This is such a legendary band, especially if you are into progressive rock. I always look at the top five progressive rock bands. You know, you look at Yes, you look at Emerson, Lake & Palmer, you look at the Moody Blues, and I got to tell you, King Crimson right up on that Mount Rushmore, if you will, of classic rock, progressive rock.
They're the mountain itself.
What led to this tour? Let me start off with that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It was before the pandemic, and Adrian Belew called me. And when I heard he was calling me, my mind went to, oh, Adrian Belew, Steve Vai, but probably do some pretty cool things together. And then he called me, mentioned what he was looking to do was to celebrate these three King Crimson records that were released in the 80s.
Yeah.
And that's Beat, Three of a Perfect Pair, and Discipline. And those three records, when they came out, they were like monoliths. It was a whole different evolution of progressive. You could hear it on the radio, and they were very successful, beloved records. Mm-hmm. And 43 years later, Adrian wanted to celebrate that music. And, of course, he reached out to Fripp and Bill Bruford, but I believe they're pretty much retired from playing this kind of music. So he called me, and at first I was like, wow, I love that music. I mean, that music was very important to me as you know, in my early 20s when it came out. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I thought was, well, what does Robert think about this?
Right, that's what I was thinking, too.
That's his band, you know?
Right.
And I was assured that, you know, Robert was the first one that Adrian talked to about it. Of course, you got to get his blessing, you know? And he gave it. He was very supportive. He feels that King Crimson music should be played in all sorts of formats. And he even suggested the name Beat, you know, because it's after one of those records.
It was the middle album,
So that was enough for me. Then I thought, well, I better listen to this music because I know Robert Fripp, you know, and I know of, you know, just his notorious guitar style and how he honed it through decades and decades of intensive discipline and like forensic approach, you know, because he takes a holistic approach to playing the guitar. It involves a very specific technique of picking, posture, state of mind, you know, it's a holistic approach. And I listened to it again, and in listening, I thought, so this might be a little tricky here and there, you know. But then, and I said, okay. And but then the pandemic hit, and nobody could do anything except maybe record at home, and that's what I did. And I made Inviolate, which was my last solo record.
Right. Yep.
And once that was done, I needed to tour on that. So Adrian was still waiting. You know, and I said, you know, I'd love to do this, but you may want to consider getting somebody that is, you know, more readily available right now. And he said, nope, I'm not doing it unless you're going to do it. I'm like, what? Because he just thought I was the right guy, you know. And so I did my tour, and then we started to talk again. And that's when I started listening and learning the music. And lucky for me, there's this transcription book that was put together by five different people, pretty much. And it's a forensic note-for-note transcription of those three records. How lucky was I? Because, obviously I read music. Mm-hmm. I could listen to the records and learn, but it's very hard to hear because Adrian and Robert do these, interlocked moving polymetric guitar lines, and they use the same tone. So it's virtually impossible, you know, to hear what each guy is doing, and it's
sure.
very, very intricate. So luckily I had the book, and when I started to see what Robert's parts were, you know, I had a full-on panic attack. I'm like, what? Wait a minute. He's not really doing that. Oh, yes, he is. Well, and I'm like, you know, well, let me see if I can do it this way. And you just can't. To stay loyal and respect the notes, Robert's parts are organized so that there's really no real practical way of playing them except the way he wrote them. So I set out to do that, and I pretty much did. You know, there's certain passages in a couple of songs that are just too death-defying, you know, for his style. You know, his style is something that has to be honed.
Well, that's a question I was going to ask you. Are there any songs in those three albums, and the way you articulated and how you dissected his style of playing, was there anything that even challenged Steve Vai?
Oh, come on, yeah. It's the vast majority of it is challenging because it's all these weird picking things. And metrically, you got to have a bulletproof sense of inner time. But I can play, you know, I play the stuff the way he pretty much played it, but it sounds like me. The things that are really different are there's a couple of passages, songs like Frame by Frame, that have that notorious, relentless picking part that I don't know many people, if anybody, that can do it. And something like Elephant Talk, you know, there's another very quirky thing. So I changed the way, so I use hammers and tapping as opposed to picking on a couple of the things, and it works good. The other thing that is very different is back then, those guys had these guitar synthesizers, and they were the first ones to use these first guitar synthesizers by Roland that came out. But, you know, Flash had 40 years, and the technology has totally changed. So I went back to Roland, and I got their latest gear, which is, you know, it's a lot more robust. It's got a lot more patches. You can do a lot more. So I had the opportunity to start building these guitar synthesizer patches. And that, you know, Robert was famous for that, him and Adrian. You know, I put a spin on that because I have to.
You said you received Robert Fripp's blessing. Did you two meet? Did you, I mean, obviously you spoke, but did you meet up? Did you share any ideas? He knows about this tour. Is it bittersweet for him? Because he's been in all the different iterations. You know, they've had many different lineups over the years, you know, since their inception in the late 60s. He's always been a part of it. What was that like to talk to him?
Well, it's not King Crimson, you know, it, without Robert, it's just not King Crimson.
And that's why you didn't call it King Crimson, I would imagine.
Yeah, I wouldn't have joined it if it was called King Crimson. You know, that's ridiculous. But, I've known Robert because I toured with him with G3.
Sure.
And, you know, I've always found him to be delightful and funny and interesting. But, you know, he also is an incredibly disciplined when it comes to his music and the way he functions. It like most, you know, brilliant artists, it's got to be a particular way. So I was never on that side of the fence, you know. But Robert and I, we've kind of stayed in touch, you know, through those years. And then when this happened, he was in town. When I joined the band, Robert happened to have been in L.A. doing a couple of speaking engagements. So I went down and met him, and we had a wonderful chat. And I asked him, I said, and I'm only saying this because it's public, you know, he had announced it. And I said, what did you think when you heard I was doing this gig, when Adrian told you? And he said, I told Adrian that that Steve is the only one that could play my guitar.
Wow. Wow.
So I was like, well, Father Robert, I got news for you. Nobody can play your guitar parts like you, that's for sure.
You're a classy guy.
But he's been very helpful in wonderful ways.
What was the music of, you said you were in your 20s and you loved those three albums that they came out with in the early 80s. Were you familiar with, you know, King Crimson's music from the 70s and the prog rock era? Were you a fan of that music?
I was a fan of various iterations only because that's what I was exposed to. And as a young boy, I was exposed to that, you know, the first King Crimson record.
Sure.
And I liked it. I liked it a lot. But I was sort of more into rock and roll. I was a Led Zeppelin kid.
Sure.
You know, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Queen. And then my friend down the street, John Sergio, he was, and I'm like 10, 11, 12, you know, teenager. And he turned me on to all that great progressive stuff. King Crimson, ELP, Jethro Tull.
Right.
Huge.
Yeah, sure.
Yes. You know, and some of it really resonated with me. So I was, you know, listening to a particular iteration of King Crimson, and then I lost track. And then when the 80s, these 80s came out, I was all over them. You know, they really resonated with me. And then after that, I kind of lost track.
Yeah, your career went in a different direction. We're talking with Steve Vai, he and the rest of Beat. It's kind of an 80s iteration of King Crimson, featuring the three albums that were released. I think it was between 81 and 84. Discipline,
yeah.
Beat, and Three of a Perfect Pair. They're going to be over at the Bushnell. Mortenson Hall at the Bushnell on December 3rd. You know, you mentioned the very first album. Will you be playing exclusively music from those three albums of the early 80s? Is there any room for any of the 70s students? For example, in the Court of the Crimson King, I mean, how do you not want to hear that song? Everybody wants to hear that song.
Right, right. Well, we had to pick our battles, and we did decide to do one of the epic earlier Crimson songs in tribute, and that's Red.
Yeah,
so there you go. Play that. But the band, it's phenomenal. Every night when I play this music, it's so brilliant, and it's so enjoyable because it kind of scratches an itch that nothing can reach. Just there's a rich complexity in it, but it's very accessible. And Adrian is just
He's a legend.
Guy.
Speaking of which, I mean, will you two play any solo music? Like, do you have For the Love of God on there? Does Baloo have Oh Daddy on there? Or
No.
This is
that's not what this is. This isn't a celebration of Steve Vai.
Well, you know, but people are there to see you. Adrian Ballou, of course, legendary. I mean, he's recorded with so many people, and everybody knows Danny Carey as well from his days with Tool. If I'm not about how you prepare for this tour in comparison to other times that you've been out on the road with the various bands that you've toured with.
Well, it's one of the reasons I took this gig was because it was going to be a challenge, and for some reason I gravitate to like real challenges. So the preparation for this was intensive. I mean, intensive.
Yeah.
I started and I had to develop certain picking muscles that had just either never been there because I'm a good picker. I was.
Sure.
And, but with Fripp, it's different. You know, it's not conventional. So I really, it was great because One of the things I love most about playing the guitar, and I'm sure listeners that play understand this, is when you have an impulse to do something on the guitar that you can't do, but you know if you work on it, you get it. And you work and you work and you work, and then all of a sudden it starts to come together, and then all of a sudden you own it. And it's like, it's a feeling of real satisfaction, you know. So this music was chock full of that because so much of it was outside of my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But I knew I could, you know, I knew I could contribute appropriately. So it was a lot of work, and it was great. And when we finally got to rehearsals, I'm happy to report I was completely prepared.
Of course you are, because that's in your DNA. You know, I was telling some people here.
Yeah, because I would be scared to death not to be.
Well, you got to be prepared. You're up on the big stage. And let's face it, you know, when Adrian Ballou is up there and Tony Levin and Steve Vai is up on the stage, I mean, your reputations precede you. There's expectations that need to be met, right? You know,
well, you got to deliver for the music. You know, it's funny because when they're putting this together, you know, managers get together and people, there's the component of promoters and agents, and they're thinking, okay, but how many tickets are we going to sell? Okay, we got Steve Vai, he's good for this many. We got Danny Carey, we got all the guys, and they kind of calculate. But what happened when the tickets went on sale, the whole tour virtually sold out in a day.
I believe it.
There's a couple of later shows that still have tickets and stuff. And I realized right at that moment, it's the music. You know, they're happy that we're there as individuals, but this audience is passionate about this music. I see it every night, unlike any band that I have ever been in.
All right, stay right there. Steve, stay right there. I got to take a short break. We're going to come right back more with Steve Vai right after this. We are back. We're talking to Steve Vai, whose band Beat will be performing in Hartford over at Mortenson Hall at Bushnell Center in Hartford on December 3rd. Tickets are still on sale. If you like the 80s King Crimson albums, Discipline, Beat, Three of a Perfect Pair, this is the concert for you. Steve, why do you think some of those 80s albums from King Crimson, why do you think they're often overlooked?
Well, there may be a stigma in some people's mind that it's artsy music or it's progressive. And, you know, for some people, that might be the case. But for a lot of people, for even those people that may not be prog heads, there's real music there. I mean, Adrian Belew's vocal, his voice in and of itself is one thing, and it's supreme in this music, but his inner ear for melodies and lyrics and just his untouchable guitar style. I mean, Adrian Belew is the one alone, you know, what he does, nobody even tries to do, you know, and I see him do it every night, and it's phenomenal, you know? So that was part of all that music, and that's one of the things that made it so accessible too, is those melodies. So if you're just not a prog fan, I challenge you to listen to those records and not find stuff that you love.
Yeah.
I mean, there's songs in there like Mate Kudasai. There's so many
I know
that are not challenging for non-musicians. You know,
you're a humble guy, Steve. I mean, don't sell yourself short. As a matter of fact, I was telling some people here, you know, at the radio station, you know, people casual early days with Alcatraz and Zappa and David Lee Roth and Whitesnake. Serious fans, you know you from the G3 project and, of course, all of your solo albums. And there was actually a couple people even here surprised to hear that you're involved in this project. Should they be, or does that falls into your wheelhouse?
I had just toured for 19 months on Inviolet, and you know, I did 256 shows in 51 countries. I mined the entire planet twice. I couldn't go out as a solo artist again, and I wanted a tour. And this, because I'm asked all the time, are you ever going to join a supergroup? I get invitations, now and then to join these 80s style rock bands to relive the glory days of yore, you know, and I'm not interested in that at all. I did all that, but I always felt if a band came along, if individuals that were highly talented and creative and weren't interested in just having commercial success, but doing something excessive but interesting, I would consider it. And, you know, next thing you know,
I was going to say, you kind of landed in that.
Mentioned it to the universe, and it just showed up.
I've only got about 2 minutes left. What can people expect from this show?
There's a lot of, I know this, it sounds great, there's a lot of joy coming from that stage. The guys, we're all beaming, you know, because the music is 44 years old, but it's still relevant. Mm. It still sounds fresh and new, and it's a great experience to watch a bunch of guys get up there, honor this music, which is just fantastic music.
My one final question, we're going to make it a fun one, and I'm going to promo this show once again. Give me four guitarists, living or dead, that would be on your Mount Rushmore. So this is Steve Vai's guitar Mount Rushmore, living or dead.
Oh, I'd need a couple of mountains for that. But you got, for me, in my wheelhouse, it's Jimmy Page, Brian May, Alan Holdsworth,
ooh,
and Joe Satriani.
Your teacher, your mentor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me promo this event one more time because it's so well worth it. I know tickets are going to go really fast. Over at the Mortenson Hall at Bushnell Center in Hartford on December 3rd, the name of the band is Beat. It features Adrian Belew, Tony Levin, Danny Carey, and Steve Vai. The three classic albums from the early 80s, Discipline, Beat, and Three of a Perfect Pair. Steve Vai, thank you so much for your time this morning. I greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
I look forward to the concert, and good luck with the tour.
Right on.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.